Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 221, Secrets of the Bulletproof Spirit, with Azim Kamisa. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
What I've learned from my journey, David, is that you get problems in life your heads cannot solve. You get problems in life your hearts cannot heal. I mean, in my deepest crisis, I have a degree in math and finance, and I always say it was useless. What saved me was my spiritual foundation. I started to meditate when I was 20 years old, and I lost my son in my 40s. And I remember I couldn't sleep or eat, but I could meditate.
That was the voice of my guest, Azim Kamisa, speaking about developing what he calls a bulletproof spirit. Having lost his only son, Tariq, to a gang-related murder, Azim N. Kamisa is a rare individual who not only speaks of powerful and life-changing concepts, but also walks his talk, having created a foundation in his son's name, the Tariq Kamisa Foundation, which is dedicated to breaking the cycle of youth violence by empowering children, saving lives, and teaching peace. Azim is also the author of 3 best-selling books, Azim's Bardo, From Murder to Forgiveness, A Father's Journey from Forgiveness to Fulfillment, and this latest one with his co-author Gillian Quinn, The Secrets of the Bulletproof Spirit. Now, here's the interview. Azim Kamisa, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you.
You and your co-author, Gillian Quinn, have written a fascinating book called The Secrets of the Bulletproof Spirit, and I'm eager to speak with you about your work on this topic.
Thank you. Yes, it's been very well received. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful, as it should be. Now, the subtitle of the book is How to Bounce Back from Life's Hardest Hits. And I really like that subtitle for a couple of reasons. One is I like your use of the word hits for the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. It's colloquial, and it's a word and concept that I think we can all relate to. The other thing I like is your frank acknowledgement that we all take hits sooner or later, right?
Absolutely. It's part of living, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, you took a major hit in your own life, and maybe you can tell us what brought you to this work.
Yes, it was a personal tragedy, and this was a tragedy on a Richter scale of 10, because how do you deal with the loss of a child? I think probably what I've learned is that parents were not engineered to withstand the loss of a child. It's probably the most complex thing a parent can go through. 14 years ago, my son, who was a student at San Diego State University and worked as a pizza delivery man on Fridays and Saturdays for a local Italian restaurant, it was his turn to make a delivery, and he went to, it's a middle class area where they delivered pizzas all the time. He was lured to a building with a fake apartment number, and he knocked on many doors and found out that nobody had ordered the pizza, so he came back to his car and put the pizzas in the trunk and climbed into the driver's side seat. And as he's trying to back away from the scene of the crime, he was accosted by 4 youth gang members. 3 of them were 14-year-old. The leader of the gang was an 18-year-old who handed a 9mm gun to a 14-year-old. And as my son was trying to back away from the driveway, the leader gave the order, "Bust him, Bones." Bones was the 14-year-old gang member's nickname, and he fired one round, which entered my son's body under the left armpit, traveled across the upper part of his chest, and the bullet actually came out of the right armpit. And as the coroner explained to me afterward, he said, "Azim, this was a perfect path." He says, "We don't see a path like this very often." And I said, "A perfect path?" And he said, "Yes, because it destroyed all the vital organs." And my son died, drowning in his own blood a couple of minutes later over a lousy pizza. At the age of 20. I mean, you know, he was a great kid, charismatic, good student, had a wonderful girlfriend that he had just got engaged to and had moved in together. Always a lot of friends, a generous, good writer. He was an amazing photographer. I mean, and we had him for a short 20 years. I mean, he was a very important part of my family. So needless to say, it brought my life to a crashing halt.
Yes, it was. It's a nightmare that I think every parent fears. What was your life before your son's?
Yes, my life was very full. I worked as an international investment banker. I speak a half a dozen languages, and I was educated in England, and primarily worked in the investment banking field, mostly doing international work, and, you know, used to think nothing of coming in from London, changing suitcases and flying to Tokyo. And after he died, you know, it literally took all of my willpower just to climb out of bed.
I can well imagine.
Yes. So yes. It was very difficult those early days. You know?
Oh, yeah. Did you go through some stages following his murder? Were there, you know, they talk about the stages of grief. Do you recognize any stages that you went through?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and the first stage is exactly that, is to acknowledge that you have been wrong. It's a grieving process. And I have, with the grace of God, I have survived the loss, but the first few weeks and months were extremely hard. You don't sleep, you don't eat, your biological functions change. Mm. You're like a zombie. I was suicidal at one point because I did not know how to live without my son. He was a big part of my life, as children are.
You must have been very angry as well, I would think, in those early stages.
I wasn't so angry at my son's killer. I was angry at our society because what I saw in this tragedy, which probably a lot of people wouldn't have seen, is I saw that there were victims at both ends of the gun. I saw my son was a victim of the 14-year-old gangbanger, and I saw the 14-year-old gangbanger as a victim of our society.
Mm-hmm.
And as an American, I felt we are all responsible for the society we've created. We love this country, and I'm a naturalized American. I'm an immigrant firstborn. I was born in Africa, although my roots are Middle Eastern, and I went to school in England, as I said earlier, and I immigrated to the U.S. in 1974, and my son was actually born here. So as an American, I'm a naturalized American, I felt I must take my responsibility because I am part of this society, and this bullet was fired by an American child. And I really felt I should take my share of the responsibility for that bullet, and quite frankly, so should every caring American, because I have learned that kids in our country at the ages of 10 and 11 join gangs for all the wrong reasons. And we're not doing a lot about it. It's a huge problem. 75 kids get shot every single day. About 13 die. The rest end up in wheelchairs. And another 230 kids are arrested every single day for violent crime. I mean, this is every day. And I'm talking kids ages 12 through 19. And something like 30% of our kids flirt with gangs. And I thought, my God, this is not right. So 9 months after Tariq died, I set up a foundation which is named after him. It's called the Tariq Kamisa Foundation, and our website is tkf.org, tkf.org. And essentially, after I started the foundation, I reached out in forgiveness to the grandfather and guard, you know, my son's killer. And I explained to him that I don't come to you in anger or resentment or retribution. I said, what I see here is we both lost a son. My son died and your grandson went to adult prison. There's nothing I can do to get my son out of, I can't bring my son back from the dead, and there's nothing you can do to get your son out of the prison. And I've learned that there are so many challenges for these young folks, and shared with him all the statistics. And I said, I started this foundation with the mission statement of stopping kids from killing kids by breaking the cycle of youth violence, by first saving lives, and by number two, teaching and empowering the right choices. And the last piece is to teach the principles of nonviolence and peace and compassion. And I've come to you in the spirit of forgiveness.
What was his reaction to that?
Yeah, I told him that, while I can't get my son back from the dead and you can't get him out of prison, we can stop other kids from our community making the same mistakes as your grandson did. And this is a very lofty mission. And
yes.
Will you help me? And he was very quick to take my hand of forgiveness. And he told me right there. And when I met him, I remember looking in his eyes, and there was this connection which was beyond your mind or your heart. It was almost at what I call a cellular level. I've coined the word cellular. And there was this this recognition of being one soul. And he was very quick to take my hand of forgiveness. And he said, the first thing was, as I've been praying that someday I would have the opportunity to extend my condolences to you and your family. And he said, you've been in my daily prayers and meditation, and of course I will help you. And we've now been together for 14 years. We've reached 8 million kids.
Wow.
I have personally spoken to 500,000 lives. We have over 150,000 letters from kids, and we are successfully keeping kids away from gangs and guns and violence. And I started the foundation with no staff and about $8,000, and today we are 50 employees and have a $2 million budget. And there is so much demand for the work we're doing. I wish I had $200 million because I want to be in every classroom in the world. And the program starts by me and him together. And we go to schools and we're introduced. This man's grandson killed this man's son, and here they are together. And we met in some extremely trying circumstances. He's African-American, I'm Eastern, he's Christian, I am Muslim. And here we are, brother, his grandson took the life of my son. It's a very powerful visual image of how you create love and unity from conflict.
Well, I'll say it is. Now, I'm wondering, I don't know if it was your Muslim upbringing or what, but somehow it seemed like perhaps you had been somewhat bulletproofed, to use your phrase, before the tragedy.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, what in your prior life bulletproofed you?
Yeah. Yes, I think it was my spiritual foundation. Mm-hmm. What I've learned from my journey, David, is that you get problems in life your heads cannot solve. You get problems in life your hearts cannot heal. I mean, in my deepest crisis, I have a degree in math and finance, and I always say it was useless. What saved me was my spiritual foundation. I started to meditate when I was 20 years old, and I lost my son in my 40s. And I remember I couldn't sleep or eat, but I could meditate. I used to do an hour a day. Now I do 2 hours a day. And I feel that without the spiritual foundation, I wouldn't be talking to you. So one thing I've learned is we all have a bulletproof spirit. Although not all of us are connected to that bulletproof spirit. And that's the point of this book. Is when you are connected to the bulletproof spirit, when you have a strong spiritual foundation, I can tell you there are no problems. And I want to repeat that there are no problems that you get in your life that you cannot solve or heal.
Yes.
And I'm a living testament to that.
Well, I'll say, I guess this is what in psychology would be referred to as resilience. Have you and your co-author reviewed any of the research literature on resilience?
Yes, I think that the resilience is part of it, and I think you see that a lot in a lot of kids that have been, gone through abuse or gone through our social services, that they do develop a resilience. But I think beyond, I didn't go through a lot of heartache. I grew up in a nice family and had a strong spiritual foundation, but I think that the ability to understand that the soul or the spirit is mightier than the head and the heart. That a head is a logical device. I have a good friend that says a mind is a dangerous place to go by yourself because a mind will justify anything. You know, Hitler justified killing 6 million Jews and a lot of people joined him. And some of us that are more evolved think that, you know, we live in the heart, but the heart is where emotion resides. And how often as humans do we carried away by our emotions? A lot. So the point I'm trying to make here is that the real resolutions are in the soul, because the soul is mightier than the head and the heart. The soul has a rudder. The soul has wisdom. The soul has compassion. The soul is really, I believe in God, the soul is the God within us. It is our connection with God. And once you tap into that reserve, once you tap into that resource, you essentially have God as your partner. And I think that where you are able to build the spiritual foundation, and the book helps you go through, because if you look at the book, we talk about five different sections, where we talk about your bulletproof birthright. And then our second section is a bulletproof plan. The third one is bulletproof breakthroughs. The fourth section is a bulletproof blueprint. And then the last section is a bulletproof best practices. And these best practices are essentially help you develop that spiritual foundation. And I was lucky that I started meditating at 20, and I was given, because, you know, forgiveness is a blessing, and a blessing is when preparation meets grace. And I was given this gift of forgiveness very quickly, because 9 months after Tariq died, I was able to reach out to the family of my son's killer, because I had the preparation in place. And when preparation meets grace, that's what a blessing is. So I truly believe now that it is important for all of us to, it doesn't matter whether you're Muslim or Jew or Christian or Buddhist, it doesn't matter. Or even if you are an atheist, it doesn't matter, because we all have a soul, we all have a spirit, and spirituality is the study of the soul. I mean, if you had a, you know, you can go to a surgeon who can operate on the frontal cortex of your brain, if there was a problem with your brain, but you can't go to a doctor and say, fix my soul.
Right.
And yet we all have a soul. And what do we know about it? Just because you can't see it doesn't mean we don't have it. We have, the soul is our best attribute. It is the most powerful organ that we possess. And I think that you built this practice by creating some kind of a spiritual practice. Now, I do it through meditation. You can do it through prayer, inspirational reading. You can do it with nature. There are many ways that you can connect with your spirit.
Yes. Now, it seems to me that part of the challenge of writing a book such as you've done is walking the tightrope between denial and realistic hope. And I think you and your co-author have done a good job of doing that.
Right, right. And I think that one of the things you learn, that if you are in denial, you are a victim. And I had a very full life when my son was alive. And I wanted that full life again. I have it again today. It's different. I don't spend as much time doing investment banking. Most of my work, 80% of my work now, is working with kids and adults, and I teach a course on forgiveness. So the key point I want to make here is, you know, if I could have gone through life on crutches and saying I lost my one and only son, I have a beautiful daughter, but he was my only son, and people do feel sorry for you, but I didn't want people to feel sorry for me, neither do I want to go through life on crutches. And there's no way that you can stop being a victim without forgiving. Mm-hmm. Once you forgive, you are no longer a victim. And this is important, that forgiveness is something you do for yourself. I mean, why do you want such meager, important real estate of your psyche occupied by somebody who's hurt you? Why not forgive and release that real estate of your psyche so love and joy can live there?
Yes. Well, let's step through some of the strategies in your book. You say that bullets or hits are spiritual bullion. Say a bit about that.
Yeah, essentially in every hit, I mean, you know, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, I've had many hits in my life as an immigrant too, and I've been able to to take my life to the next level. I mean, we get hits all the time, David, you know, and you are at this door, and behind you is stuff that doesn't work anymore. You know, people hang into relationships that don't work. They stay in abusive areas, or they keep working in companies that they are not getting the fullest satisfaction from. And the point I'm trying to make is, when you get a hit, you know, the universe is trying to speak to you. You need to move through that door, because it doesn't serve you anything. And right outside the door is a whole new world.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I've taken a hit, you know, and I sometimes I say, you know, it takes faith, because, you know, it may feel like a chasm to go through that door.
Yes.
But and you can't cross a chasm in two steps. You've got to make that, you know, you've got to take that leap of faith.
Right.
But go for it, because when you do go for it, the universe is waiting on the other side to catch you and to help you and have a whole new life. So every time you take a hit, you know, spiritually. So what this book does, David, is, you know, it provides the information and inspiration. The difference between somebody who is spiritually resilient and somebody who is spiritually fragile, the difference is that the spiritually resilient people have that inspiration and information. And for a spiritually fragile person to get there, this book will be very helpful. The spiritually resilient person talks about, doesn't say, why did this happen to me? A spiritually resilient and spiritual person would say, why did I attract this to me? What wisdom can I garner from this hit? And how do I take the bullion from this hit and make the leap of faith to become a better person, you know, or to have a more fulfilling life? I mean, I can clearly tell you, I am a better person. Not that I was a bad person 14 years ago, but I'm a better person, and we can all be better people. Mm-hmm. And I can clearly say that I made the right choice 14 years ago. I could have gone the other way. Where would I be today?
Right.
And in my life, when I made that choice, I honored my son, I honored my family, I honored myself, I honored the killer, I honored his family, and I'm helping society. And yet, knowing I made the right choice, knowing that most everybody else goes the other way, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And that leads into my next question. You have a short chapter on entitlement. One of my colleagues was just complaining to me that our college students seem to feel very entitled these days. They demand high grades. How does entitlement come into play in terms of the bulletproof spirit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, entitlement is what I call the enemy of energy, you know. The thing about entitlement is that it really, you know, zaps the energy necessary to take the hit and come out on top. You know, spiritually fragile people spend a lot of time with psychic, emotional, and physical energy reacting to the unfairness they experience, because they feel they are entitled to a certain kind of life.
Yes.
One without hits that hurt. And that's not realistic. You know, spiritual resilient people don't do that. They resist these feelings of entitlement and use all of their energy and resources to do all they can with whatever it is they have been given. And I think this is an attitude, you know. You know, you don't want to... You don't want to think, why me, or why did this, I'm entitled to this. Everybody gets hit. Everybody mm-hmm. has a story.
That's right.
If you are spiritually resilient, and if you are spiritually bulletproof, you see past the surface dynamics of your relationship, and you get to the real role of mutual spiritual evolution, because I actually believe we all have a spiritual purpose. And my spiritual purpose was, you know, working with kids and stopping violence and the work I'm doing in forgiveness, not as an investment banker. I did not know that. And the gift that came out of my son's tragedy is it put me on my spiritual purpose. And when you are on your spiritual purpose, your partner is the universe. So when you look at this entitlement, again, it's a victim mentality.
Yes.
Is you've got to look and say, this is not the attitude. I got to be spiritually resilient. And right in this entitlement, I am shortchanging myself.
Yes. Now, you have several chapters that focus on the grieving process. For example, you say, grieve like a guru. How does one grieve like a guru?
Right. Well, you know, according to my Sufi tradition, we have a, I'm a Sufi Muslim, and when a person dies, we are told that for 40 days after the soul passes on the other side, it stays, during the 40 days, it stays in close proximity of its loved one and family. So for 40 days, I had people coming to my house every day from my mosque. They brought breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and everybody had to ask the story. And I couldn't say Tariq died. I would say Tariq, and the word died would send like 2,000 volts, you know, surge through my body. So sure. It would take me a long time to get out and say, well, he died. And they would wait, and they would hold my hand, and they would do prayers, and I finally would get it out. And I used to think, I'm not going to be able to tell this story one more time. So the 40 days are for grieving, and at the end of 40 days, you know, I was counseled that after the 40 days, the soul moves to a new consciousness. I don't like to think of Tariq as dead. I like to think of Tariq at home. We are all eventually going there. Mm-hmm. And souls also have a journey. And so I was counseled by my teacher, the rabbi in, you know, Muslim faith, that excessive grieving after the 40 days will impede your son's journey, mm-hmm. your son's soul's journey. It says, other than grieve, you do a good deed. And good deeds are spiritual currency. Good, compassionate deeds are spiritual currency, and they will transfer to the departed soul and will help fuel your son's journey.
Yes.
So I thought, why don't they teach this stuff to you in college? You know?
Right, really. Well, I'm trying to. I'm going to teach a course on positive psychology, and we will be covering many of these points.
Yeah. So 40 days was not enough time, David, and the clouds didn't part for me for about 3.5 years. But I started the foundation 9 months later in my son's name, thinking I'm going to create, because the foundation, a nonprofit, by its mandate, does good, compassionate deeds. It's what we do when we go to schools. So I was able to start this foundation because I wanted to create spiritual currency for my son. And the inspiration was, I want to do something for my son. It's an automatic thing for a parent. You go on a vacation, you buy a gift for your kids before you buy one for yourself. And I wanted to create spiritual currency for my son because I was taught by my spiritual teacher that by doing compassionate deeds in his name, you can create spiritual currency which provides high-octane fuel for the soul's journey. And I thought, I'm going to create millions of dollars of spiritual currency so Tariq could finish his forward journey in a rocket. So, yeah, that felt good to me.
Yeah, a great way to express it. And then eventually, right. I guess you came to the place you talk about invoking the sunset clause in relation to grief, which suggests that there is a time, finally, to let go of it. How does one move on from the grief?
Yes, and that's exactly the point. That's a very good question because there are several chapters on forgiveness. So the first is acknowledge you've been wrong. That's grieving. And the best way to do this, by the way, is through ritual. Mm-hmm. I explained to you my Sufi ritual, but all faiths have ritual. But you have to have a sunset on the grieving because if you don't stop grieving, you remain in victimhood. So while it's important to grieve, it is also important to stop grieving. Now, the Sufi tradition says grieve for 40 days. Now, I suggest to people grieve as long as you want, but then you got to stop that grieving and take that energy and put it into something positive for society by creating, in the name, whatever it is that you'll do, if you want to join a nonprofit or go volunteer or work in a soup kitchen or give help a lady cross the street. In any way you can, go out there and create compassionate deeds because in that giving of compassionate deeds is where the real healing comes in. I love talking to kids because I know I'm saving lives. I know that I'm keeping kids away from gangs, guns, and violence. I know that I'm empowering the right choices. I know I'm teaching the principles of peacemaking, love, forgiveness, and compassion. And through that, I get the healing. So, and I love the work because it has brought so much meaning, and my son did not die in vain. So at some point, whatever that your hit was, right there is the message of once you're done with the grieving piece, you evoke the sunset clause, you stop grieving, and you take that energy and transform it to the soul or the spirit, because the soul is a prism. It can take, disperse negative dark light and create positive, bright laser focus light. And that's what you got to do.
Yes. How did you hook up with your co-author, Gillian Quinn? Is she a Sufi as well, or does she come out of a different tradition?
No, she actually is came out a Christian, and she is a teacher, a mother, and a wife. And she teaches, a professor, she teaches a course of miracles. She's a very spiritual lady. She lost a daughter in a trimester. You know, she was she was almost ready to deliver it, and then lost it in a pregnancy, and then went through some very cathartic experiences, and then went to China and has adopted a third child. She has had two and lost her third child, and she was here in San Diego. She lives actually upstate New York, and she was and her husband's a teacher as well, so they take summer vacations. And they were in San Diego, and she came to one of my talks. I speak often. I've given like 300 keynote speeches, and she came to one of my speeches. Was also writing a book and was looking for a chapter on forgiveness, and obviously my story was perfect. And then after we met, and she did came to my house, and I gave her my story, and she wrote the chapter. But then eventually it led for us to do a book together, because she really always wanted to do a book on forgiveness, and she asked me if I would be interested in doing a book with her on and actually she came up with a title and did a lot of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote it together, but a lot of the stuff that I gave her came in interviews and in conversations, and then looking at every chapter. And but she's a great writer and did a phenomenal job on the book.
Yes, it's well written. Yeah, I like the structure of it. And I love the chapter title, Dance Between Desire and Detachment. Take us to the dance.
Yes.
Take us to the dance, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a Chinese symbol that has the symbol for crisis, which is essentially a conflict, which is between the dance and the desire, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What I talk about, the dance between desire and detachment is essentially very similar, because the Chinese symbol for crisis has the symbol for danger and the symbol for opportunity.
Yes.
So in every crisis, the danger is to create more conflict. The opportunity is to create love and unity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, spiritually resilient people can understand the difference that, that spiritually fragile people are often unaware of how important their desires really are to the manifestation of their dreams. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I truly believe that if you are very clear, you must figure out how to combine passionate desire with dispassionate detachment.
Yes.
So this dance of desire and detachment requires grace and practice, but will reward you with tremendous boost in your ability to bounce back after taking a hit. I mean, I always say that when you are, and I do it through meditation, when you are at Alpha and you put out very clearly to the universe what you desire, the how-to is not important. But if you really put it out there and say, this is, and obviously the desire has to be in the highest good for me, for even the killer of my son, for society. And if it is in integrity and if it's clear, I believe the universe then conspires to make that happen.
Yes, I've seen instances of that in my own life.
Yeah. So what you see here is a spiritually bulletproof people combine the creative power of their desires and the profound power of detachment to heal from their hits and manifest their dreams.
Yes.
So there's a process here. I mean, I tell people, if you don't know how to forgive, set that intention out there. Make sure there are no strings attached to it. Make sure it is in the highest good for you and that other person in society. And through meditation or however you want to do it, get that intention out to the universe in a consistent way. And I meditate 3 times a day, but I always tell people to do at least 2x a day. And once you get there, it will manifest.
Well, you've got 30 chapters, each with some very specific advice and homework exercises, and I'm not going to ask you to give away the whole book here. The country, indeed the world, is going through economic hardship right now. What bulletproofing advice do you have for our listeners who are maybe hard hit by the economic downturn?
Well, I think my biggest advice is I don't worry about problems that money can solve. I worry about problems that money cannot solve. So I think you need to look at your blessings, and hopefully you are healthy and you are able to work and you're able to have a family and you're able to have other blessings in your life. And I think that if you've had a financial hit, maybe it's time to look and say, you know, life is not about the, you know, the relentless pursuit of the almighty dollar. That life is about integrating the other aspects of your life. And I've always had an equal emphasis on my material life and my spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm reading a book on investment banking, I'm reading, you know, the book by Dalai Lama or Thich Nhat Hanh or, you know, or Rumi. So I've always believed that you have to take things into perspective. Money, it comes and goes. You know, I've had many setbacks of money. I came here as an immigrant, made money and lost it, and I made money. And I always have felt that there's an ebb and flow to money. And I think that the thing that I have learned in my journey is that if you have built a strong spiritual life, happiness is not a material concept. It is a spiritual concept. And I work very hard not to be, you know, living in those low vibratory emotions of greed and jealousy and anger and resentment and avarice. But what's got us to this stage in the financial crisis is the greed and avarice in Wall Street and in our country as a whole.
Good point.
And that, yeah, and now there's a point to see that that was not the way we should be living our lives. That you want to live in the higher vibratory emotions of goodwill, of friendship, of trust, of empathy, of compassion, of forgiveness, of love. If you can live here all the time, you will succeed in finding happiness. So, you know, you have to look at, as the financial hits, and see what excesses you may have had, what attitudes you had about greed and avarice, and how you can now look at this hit and say, I want to not just be, you know, in the relentless pursuit of the almighty dollar. I'm going to improve my spiritual base. I'm going to improve my resiliency. I want to improve and want to be able, when this thing will turn around eventually, and, you know, I'll be much stronger, much more resilient. And yes, I've made money before. I can make money again. So it's not the end of the world. You know what I'm saying? It's an opportunity to now look and see how this financial hit can impact your core values. Were you always in this area of material pursuit, and, you know, where are you spiritually? How resilient you are, and do you have thoughts about greed? Do you have thoughts about avarice? Do you have thoughts about jealousy, or are you living in these high vibratory emotions? I think this book will be very helpful to people to develop those attitudes. And I work very hard not to get angry. I don't usually get angry, but we all have a bad hair day, right?
Yes.
so you know, but I'm able to preempt it because I've realized that when you are in those low vibratory emotions, you've essentially fallen off the wagon. Happiness does not live there. And it's important to develop good core values and good hygiene. And we have 30 different secrets here to help you so that you can not only take hits, but thrive from it.
Okay, well, you know, I think that's a perfect place for us to close. And I will put I'll put a link to your website and urge people to visit it and to look at your workshop schedule. So, Azim Kamisa, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're welcome, David.
Mm-hmm. I hope you were as moved and impressed by this interview with Azeem Kamisa as I was. I was particularly struck by Azeem's sense of responsibility for his son's death, that as an American, he shared responsibility in not doing his part to rescue the floundering youth of this nation. What a remarkable and courageous insight that was. And what a powerful testament to the importance of forgiveness. So much of what Azeem said represents the perennial wisdom which we have heard expressed in these interviews time and again in different ways, the importance of developing a spiritual practice, the importance of forgiveness, the importance of generosity, the importance of service and loving kindness to others, the importance of placing spiritual and family and community concerns over material concerns, and so on. Imagine transforming the tragedy of a child's death into reaching 500,000 youngsters with this deeply peaceful and inspiring message instead of becoming permanently locked into grief, anger, and revenge. I highly recommend this book, The Secrets of the Bulletproof Spirit, How to Bounce Back from Life's Hits, and you might want to go to Azeem's website to find out more about his work, to consider supporting it, and to see his workshop schedule. You'll find all this at www.azeemkamisa.com, and that's spelled AZIMKHAMISA.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind.
Hello, everybody. Well, it's been another 2 weeks, and I've got a special request of you, which is that I would like to ask you to nominate Shrink Wrap Radio for a podcast award. I know there are many fervent fans of the show out there, and this is your chance to take some action by nominating Shrink Wrap Radio in the education category. You'll find a nomination link in the right-hand sidebar on our website, or you can simply go directly to www.podcastawards.com. Now, this is the nomination phase, and then I think if we get enough nominations, I may later come back to you and ask you to actually vote, because I think voting will follow later. Now, speaking of the right-hand sidebar on our site, we have a new advertiser on our Top Spots widget. The top spot now links you to a place where you can order Jungian sand trays. This will be of special interest to those of you who are therapists. Please check that out. And remember, our Top Spots widget is a place where you can post your ad for your services or your podcast or your blog for a mere $20 PayPal payment, and that your ad will stay up for months and months. It may be the cheapest advertising you can find anywhere on the internet. And speaking of selling things, there is a new tab on our website. I'm very excited about this. It's for the Shrink Wrap Radio store. Right now, there are two things in our store. First, I've moved our T-shirt ad into the store tab so it's easier to find. Yes, you can get your own T-shirt with the Shrink Wrap Radio logo proudly emblazoned on it, and you can get it at cost. I make no money on these T-shirts, but would love to have you out there wearing our banner. The really new thing in the store that I'm very excited about is I have created a CD of 30 interviews related to dreams. You can see the whole list of interviewees on the site, but I can tell you here that it includes such notables as Michael Mead, Robert Moss, Charles Tart, Stanley Krippner, Jeremy Taylor, Alan Siegel, Dana Houck, John Beebe, and many more. Yes, you could download all of these from the site, but it would take you hours to do so. Plus, these are just the interviews and my commentary. No ads, no announcements, or listener emails. This would make a wonderful gift. The cost is just $20 plus shipping. And your CD comes in a beautiful DVD-style case, which will fit nicely on your bookshelf. It's got artwork on it, and the CD itself has artwork imprinted on it. I'm calling it Dr. Dave's Incredible Technicolor Dream Tour. And you can buy this CD using either PayPal or a credit card. And you should be aware that the CD consists of 30 MP3 files. So the CD will play perfectly on your computer, and the interviews can easily be downloaded onto any portable MP3 player. And it will also play on really new CD players that can handle MP3 files. Now, you might wonder, why not just record these as an audio file that would play automatically, say, on the CD player in your car? Well, if I were to do that, I couldn't get 30 interviews onto a CD. In fact, I could only get one interview on the CD. So for $20 plus shipping, you know, you're going to get these interviews at less than a dollar a piece. So I'm really hoping that you'll have some interest in doing this. And I'm wondering, what are some other things that you would like to see me offer in the store? As I've mentioned previously, I'm considering a series of CDs in which I do some hypnotic inductions. Also, it's been suggested that I provide a short ebook on how to pick a therapist. Are there any other CD compilations that you might be interested in? For example, The Best of Dr. Dave, in which I'd put my top 10 interviews on CD. If I can generate enough income through the store and donations, I could spare you the affiliate advertising. For example, I've got a new idea for a new shrink wrap radio song, but it would cost me at least $200 to get that song produced. So that's the kind of thing that this money would go towards. In other news, as you know, I recently interviewed UC professor and author Dacher Keltner on the topic of happiness and health in Shrink Wrap Radio number 217. Check out the comments area on that page if you'd like to find a link to the audio files for his entire UC Berkeley course on that topic. It's a tremendous resource. I've downloaded all of his lectures onto my iPhone, and they're going to provide a lot of good info for a short Elder Hostel-type course that I'll be teaching at Sonoma State University this January. Now, you might want to check out my other podcast series at www.wisecounselpodcast.com, where at the moment, the latest episode is my interview with Dave Hertz and Leslie Potter of Vive Incorporated, a therapeutic mentoring and parent coaching service. It's a very interesting delivery model that they've developed. Please join our Yahoo discussion group. There's a banner link on our website in the right-hand sidebar, or you can simply send an email to shrinkwrapradio-subscribe@yahoogroups.com, and that will get you subscribed. Please contact me if you'd be interested in being a volunteer transcriber. I'm afraid our transcription activity has fallen off lately. And thanks to all of you who've made financial donations, and I especially appreciate several people who have just renewed their year-long pledges. That provides an important, predictable base, which is greatly appreciated. If you haven't done so yet, please go to Shrink Wrap Radio and click on that big green donate button. And of course, I also appreciate your patronage of our sponsors using the discount links on our site for GoDaddy, Pet Meds, Brookstone, Budget Car Rentals, Angie's List, and Avis Car Rentals.
Hi, this is Fernando Blanco from Mexico City. You're on the couch, on a rock, on a boat, on a plane, with Dr. Dave.
Thanks for that transition, Fernando, all the way down in Mexico City. Hey, I hope you're still listening, buddy. Now let's try to catch up on some of our back listener email. Courtney in Arizona writes, Dear Shrink Wrap Radio, I just listened to another episode of Shrink Wrap Radio and heard Dr. David Van Nuys state that it seems to have fallen out of the top 25 on iTunes, Higher Education Podcasts. I was prompted to write, "I want you to know how much I love your show!" Exclamation point, many exclamation points after that. I tell everybody about it. Unfortunately, I have been unemployed for 8 months and have no money at all, or else I would gladly make a donation. Making a donation is definitely on my to-do list when I am earning an income. In the meantime, I intend to write a review for iTunes and post the link on my Facebook. I don't ever want the show to go away. I became interested in this podcast when I saw that Dr. Van Nuys had interviewed the author of The Feminine Face of God. Shamefully, I've drawn a blank on her name at the moment. That book for me was life-changing, and I've read it many times over, as well as purchased copies for special people in my life. When I stumbled across the interview on iTunes, I decided at once to subscribe to the podcast. Needless to say, I found the interview riveting. Moreover, I have found every interview I've listened to since captivating. I just finished the interview with Ted Neff on the highly sensitive person and can't wait to tell my friends about it. As my subject line indicates, I spend a great deal of unemployed time crocheting. I'm an avid crocheter. With my headphones on, listening to Shrink Wrap Radio, I never grow tired of the show. For your interest, I'm crocheting an Afghan right now with 30 square motifs that must be joined together. One square takes the time of approximately one episode of Shrink Wrap Radio. Perfect. What I appreciate most about Shrink Wrap Radio is Dr. Van Nuys' humble and genuinely interested interviewing style. He always seems sincerely curious about the subject matter and listens intently to the guests, drawing out wonderful tidbits of information. I'm so sick of seeing radio and television talk shows that feature a host that doesn't listen to his or her guests. It seems absurdly simple, yet is such a rarity. I will continue to spread the word, and as I promise, make a donation as soon as I'm able. Please keep up the fantastic work. Sincerely, Courtney. And she adds a P.S. I love those catchy tunes at the end of the interview. Courtney, thanks so much for your enthusiastic support and endorsement. I hope you get that job sometime very soon, not just so that you can make a donation, but just so that you can not be in distress about being unemployed. And now I can add crocheting to, let's see, I've heard from people who are gardening while listening, running, driving, etc. By the way, Courtney, the author of The Feminine Face of God that you are blocking on is Sherry Ruth Anderson. Next, we hear from Josh in Virginia, who writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, I'm a fan of both of your podcasts, and I've heard more and more recently about an emerging school of treatment that is now called experiential dynamic psychotherapy, but which was originally known as short-term dynamic psychotherapy. It has its own trade association here, and I was wondering if you had already done a program on it or might consider doing so in the future. Thanks." Well, Josh, I took action on your suggestion, and my interview with John Fredrickson will be on Wise Counsel podcast soon, so keep an ear out for it. Thanks to Nino, who wrote to recommend that I interview his friend and mentor, Ron McComb. Thanks for that recommendation, Nino. If I recall correctly, you are in Croatia. I'll keep it in mind and add it to my rather long and growing list of possible guests. Nino also wrote, "Been keeping your ad on my Facebook account 3 days now and intending to keep it three times that much, if not even more. Thought it might be of further help to you." And indeed, I really appreciate that, Nino, and all the others of you who helped to promote Shrink Wrap Radio. Longtime listener Cody wrote to express her appreciation for my interview with Ann Weiser Cornell on focusing. Among other things, Cody notes, quote, "It seems to me that focusing treatments is a very good one that can help people who are victims of abuse," end quote. And yes, Cody, I agree with you, and it also is useful for a great many other disorders and conditions. Zhao, and I'm not sure how to pronounce this, if it's Zhao or Yao, commented in our Yahoo group discussion about the same interview, saying, "Dr. Dave, I enjoyed the interview on focusing. I've been waiting for this one for a few months. I also really loved the interview with David Wallen on Wise Counsel podcast. Great stuff. And I actually remembered to make a donation while sitting at the computer today." Well, thank you for all of that. And it was great to hear from Paul, who works in civil aviation. And he writes, "Dr. Van Nuys, I just wanted to give you a thanks for your fantastic podcasts. They are a shining example of how the internet can be used to make the world a better place. I've been able to make my life more fulfilling because of the lessons I've learned listening to you and your guests. I really appreciate the gifts you've given me, Paul." Paul, thanks for that. And thanks to Tom Carroll, who wrote to recommend an interview with Princeton psychologist Daniel Kahneman, who won the 2002 Nobel Prize in Economics. Tom, I'll add that one to the growing list. Meanwhile, interested listeners can find an interview with Dr. Kahneman on YouTube. Tom sent me the link, but the URL is too long to read out here. And Russ Cobb wrote with another guest recommendation. He writes, "I recently read a couple of very good books by a Jungian analyst named Dr. James Hollis. One book was called Finding Meaning in the Second Half of Life. It was very accessible and, I thought, an extremely insightful look into why we suffer and how we lose sight of what our soul truly wants. I also found an interview of him online that was also excellent. If you're looking for interview suggestions, I thought you might consider him for either Shrink Wrap or Wise Counsel. Best, Russ." So I think that better wrap it up for today. As always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave me voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Azeem Kamisa, for insights into the secrets of a bulletproof spirit. My next show will feature an interview with my former student and good friend, Dr. Ron Alexander, who has just brought out a new book on mindfulness titled Open Mind, Wise Mind. Please stay tuned for a couple of brief sponsor announcements offering you discounts at Avis Car Rentals and Angie's List. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. Save money on your next car rental by going to avis.com/shrink. Avis tries harder with knowledge, caring, and a passion for excellence. You'll get 10% off or $30 off a weekly rental by going to avis.com/shrink or using the Avis link on our site at shrinkwrapradio.com. Next time you need someone to work on your home, repair your car, or fix your teeth, check Angie's List first. At Angie's List, you'll find thousands of unbiased ratings on hundreds of services. Just go to angieslist.com and use promo code SHRINK for 25% off your membership, or you can go to the Angie's List link on our site under the Promos tab for more information.